Now, if you focused on your survival intuition for a moment, I want you to remember a situation, a person, any kind of condition that frightened you, that totally terrified you. And I want you to remember what that felt like. Put your attention only in your solar plexus. I want you to feel the deepest fear of your life come forward as if it actually materialized. Is your fear abandonment? Is your fear finding out that you bottomed out financially? Is it a fear that your relationship broke up? Whatever it is, I want you to focus on that. And if you can do this deeply enough, you'll find that the part of your body that is absorbing and responding to you, speaking to you, dialoguing with you, is your solar plexus. That's the part that's going to be most responsive to this level of fear in your life, because this is the part that is so connected or aligned to your physical survival. So here you have a companion of recognizing in your body, in your physiology, this is where your survival intuition speaks to you. This is also where your intuition resonates with your self-esteem. If you don't have a healthy sense of self-esteem, I can tell you that your natural inclination will be to abdicate your power of choice to the strongest source around you. It will be very difficult for you to maintain your center in acts of co-creation and in making choices that best serve you if your sense of self-esteem is not strong. So if I said to you, I don't think you have an ounce of creative strength in you. I don't trust your instincts. They've never been good in this. And if you needed my approval far more than you respecting your own self, you'd give in to me. And I would now be making a choice about your life and your energy for you. You would not be able to stand up to that kind of influence or control dynamic that I would surround you with. Now think about this. If your intuition, your survival intuition, said to you, this isn't a good business deal, because survival intuition connects you to finances, real estate, safety driving down the street, safety walking down the street and spotting a person, knowing when your hunches in the physical world are accurate or not accurate. This is survival intuition. You hear mother's intuition, something's wrong with my child. That exists in this part of your body. That feeling that something's wrong with someone you're close to. When you meet somebody, someone you've loved, someone you know, someone you've just been around for a little bit, and you develop always an intuitive friendship with someone before you do a physical one. You always develop an intuitive friendship first. And with that alignment, that's why you'll sit with somebody and you'll say, what's the matter today? And the person can say nothing. And the person looks exactly like they look every other day. But you know they're not telling you the truth. You can, what? Feel it. You are intuitively doing a reading. And your survival intuition is providing you with that information. Now, if you truly respected that, knew it, followed it, could hear that voice, you would know you're accurate. You would perhaps wouldn't know why the person wasn't herself or himself, but you would know this. My intuition is accurate. If I get that feeling is accurate. It's for you to mature the quality of your intuitive voice. Your survival intuition, of course, has its limitations. Specifically, when you are doing a reading on somebody, or on something or in a situation, the survival intuition is very connected to your ego, to your personality, which means you can influence it very strongly, again, depending on the health of your self-esteem and your well-being. Let me give you an example of what toxic intuition looks like. And here again, I have to route you through self-esteem. And I'm going to connect it once again to, if your self-esteem is not healthy, if it's damaged, if it needs a lot of work, the quality of the choices you make in life are going to reflect that. And the more fragile your self-esteem, the more you will do readings, intuitive readings, take that information that you receive around people, but as I say to you, you're not consciously aware you're receiving. You will interpret that information in a way that harms you. Let me go back to the example I used about meeting somebody for lunch. That person isn't himself or herself. If your self-esteem is hurting, wounded, not healthy, you will assume automatically that the reason that person is not flying at full steam is because of you. Has to do with you. The person's angry at you. It's something you said. It's something you did. Your intuition is not yet strong enough because your self-esteem isn't strong enough to step back and evaluate that circumstance in an impersonal way. How do you know? Perhaps the person had a bad breakfast. It could be any number of reasons. The key word that I am focusing on is impersonal. Detach. The capacity to step outside of who you are and learn to evaluate, see, relate to life and its signals and guidance in an impersonal way. This changes the dynamics of the quality of choice and the manner in which you co-create completely. It upgrades you. It makes that capacity so powerful in you because you don't take your own life seriously. And what I mean by that is you're able to step outside and realize it's not just raining on you, it rains on everybody. That life has certain archetypal processes that you and everyone else is part of, such as the cycle of endings and new beginnings. Change happens. Some parts of your life get dismantled and other parts start, are born fresh. The child within you is reborn. These processes are normal and they should be anticipated. If you were able to intuitively sense, I'm entering a new cycle, I can feel it. And this is the intuition now of creativity. Where you move into that second level of intuition that says, I can feel it. I can feel that I've just been downloaded with a very creative thought. I may not be able to articulate it yet, but I've been downloaded. And my life is about to change. And what if then you could shift your attention? Just imagine as I spoke to you earlier about the natural process of creativity. What if in that moment you thought, I can feel it. I'm downloaded. It's in my seventh chakra. And now you kicked into your intuition. You consciously said, I need to be receptive, not just to my mind, not just to my thinking mechanism, not just to my rational energy, but I need to be consciously aware that I am going to receive signals, feelings, energetic patterns. I need to start hearing symbolically. I need to start responding symbolically. And most importantly of all, it's time for me to detach from any expectations of what I think this creative implant is. Now, that is so important, I cannot emphasize that enough. You feel automatically when creativity has entered your system in a way that it wasn't there yesterday. For example, you feel a sense of vibration, a sense of energy, a sense of animation. Your whole relationship with life upgrades. Suddenly you're positive. Well, yesterday you could have been negative. Suddenly you're hopeful. Well, yesterday you were depressed. This is what it feels like when you've had a creative, energetic implant. This is what it feels like when birth has entered into your atmosphere. When you feel these signals, from now on, resonate with the fact that this is creative intuition coming in. What I would suggest to you at that point, in your toolbox, this is the place at which you should take time with yourself to sit still and just let your mind wander. Turn off your rational brain. Turn it off and become very mindful if you're the sort of person who thinks and it can't be, that's impossible, versus anything can happen. Become mindful of your mind. Become mindful of the voice of your mind. Become very much aware of whether or not you abort energy on its way into your life or whether you welcome it. Become very aware of whether or not you start a dialogue with your internal spirit that says, I'll accept this creative infusion only if it comes in the package I want it to. I do not want it to disrupt my life. I don't want it to cost me anything. I don't want it to cause any kind of interference in my relationships, and I don't want it to cause me to work a 9-to-5 job. So this is fine. I'll handle the creativity, but it's got to be conditional. That's a choice. That's a choice you are making between you and the co-creative force of heaven. People don't realize that's a choice. You are completely unaware that by responding that way to divine interactions, you are actually making a choice, saying to heaven, I will accept this guidance, but it's on my terms. That's not the way to support creative flow in your life. It's a way that you block it. And as we're dealing with creativity, the many, many times I have been with people who've said, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what direction in life. Actually, if I sat there and unwound this creative knot in their spirit, you would find that if you backtracked, you've made one decision after another, only you didn't realize the consequences of the decision you were making in that moment. You didn't realize that by responding to that high voltage vibration of creative pregnancy, that you pulled back and began an instantaneous dialogue, a prayer dialogue, if you will, in which you began to put the restrictions and the parameters around what you would and would not do. You don't realize by your internal responses that those are choices. People don't realize that. You don't realize they're prayers. You don't realize that every thought is a choice and a prayer. Both. So many times I'm dealing with people who are suffering. They're suffering physically. They're suffering emotionally because intuitively they've gotten a hit. Do this with your life. Do this. Do that. And it's not necessarily job or occupation oriented. It doesn't matter. The point is a person's got a hit. And somewhere in their self, that inner reason they were born begins to bubble all the more directly. Because they're able to hear instructions at the creative, intuitive level. Only they're not able to choose to make any choices that allow that energy to take its manifestation course because their self-esteem isn't strong enough. And so here, a severance occurs between your creative energy, your creative insight, the creative potential, and your creative choices. Versus your survival fear. And now you cause an interference in your intuition. Now you've caused a block. Now you've broken a communication system and a natural process of spiritual maturation. You've broken it down. And so what happens is you start making choices for yourself that are motivated by fear versus life. They're motivated by containing yourself versus expanding yourself. And they have further consequences in that it encourages the victim in you. It's the victim in you that starts making choices. You've sabotaged yourself and you've welcomed your saboteur into the driver's seat in your life. There's a part of your inner self that never matures past the wounded child because you are wounding your creative innocence. And of course, the prostitute in you is in full swing because you've sold your talents. You've negotiated your talents, perhaps not on the streetway. I'm not referring to that, but something in the physical world, be it money, security, something has stopped you from proceeding with the higher creative vision that could begin its impact in influencing the choices behind your life. And so when guidance comes through you, when that creative voltage comes into your life, which it will, put your intuition on. Sometimes it begins in the dream state. Sometimes it begins by manifesting the energy magnetics literally in a conversation with somebody, where you had an idea and you've been thinking about perhaps starting this business or doing this or doing that, and you find yourself sitting across the table from someone who says, you know, I think we need a Whole Foods business here in town. And you just thought about it that morning. Put your intuition on. Don't walk away from there thinking, isn't that an interesting coincidence? Wipe coincidence and synchronicity out of your vocabulary. Do yourself a favor. And instead, connect the dot that that is a manifestation of your creative implant meeting validation in your physical life. Interpret it in the right way. Well, where do you go from there? You go to the next level, which is visionary intuition. I describe this as the major leagues. Visionary intuition is the masterful sight, whereas survival intuition is just fundamental. You don't need to be a vegetarian. You don't need to do any kind of oming and eyeing. You don't need to do any of that. It simply is engaged because life protects life. You don't have to meditate before you sense somebody's lying to you. Your gut tells you that, and it's where? The gut. You pay attention to your gut. Your gut doesn't lie. If you have a gut instinct, you pay attention to that. Now, listen to me. If you don't resonate and respect your intuition at that level, as that growth through creative intuition and into visionary intuition happens, it's going to be very toxic. You won't be able to read it clearly. You'll run from one psychic to another. And you'll ask that person, will you read my intuition for me? I have this feeling that you really, quite frankly, should be able to do that for yourself. You should always be able to read your survival intuition for yourself. That gut instinct is there. You know, I remember one time it was my introduction to gut intuition, and it stands out in my life because it was so dramatic, and I will never forget it. I was driving home from work one night. I was in college. It was 12:30 in the morning, and I used to work from 3:30 to midnight at a candy factory. I think I mentioned that. And as I was driving down this street, which was a fairly busy street, I heard a voice. And the voice said, slow down, a red truck is going to run the stop sign. I was not aware that I heard that voice. I was aware of it after the red truck ran the stop sign. And I thought, I was told to slow down. And, of course, because I was a baby Catholic, I grew up being told, behave yourself, there's an angel sitting next to you. On my right side, and then you know who was sitting next to me on my left. But the point is that I had such a natural rapport with non-physical direction and guidance that when this happened, I thought, how magnificent. There is a protective dynamic going around me. This angel is talking. And that's when I realized that from that point on, whenever I had a sensation in my solar plexus, I paid attention to it, and I am convinced that that was part of the reason why eventually my intuitive skills became very laser-like, because I paid attention. Creative intuition is an energy you have to grow mindful of, and you have to consciously develop as part of the tools of co-creation. This is where you begin to engage your conscious mind. Co-creation is a conscious effort. And I have to remind you that if you are not conscious of the profound dynamic and consequence of your choices in life, other people are going to make them for you. Life will make your choices if you don't. Happenstance will make your choices if you don't. Because a choice not to make a choice is a choice. That's the irony, the paradox. We cannot stop it. Creative intuition is personal. Survival is rudimentary. Visionary intuition is by design impersonal. It's incredibly impersonal. When you get to visionary, this is where Your psyche, your spirit, has the capacity to transcend who you are in this lifetime, what you're doing in this lifetime, and see your role in a much larger scope of creation. This is a phenomenal rush in the intuitive process. This is the level at which you make a bridge, a conscious connection to your companion, your angelic companion. It's at this level where a union of consciousness can be established between you and your guide. In your spirit naturally is seeking for conscious companionship with the invisible world, because that's the only world it knows fluently. When your spirit incarnates, it puts itself into a container. There are so many stories that I could share with you about people who have a recall of the process of the incarnation of their lives. They have an incredible recall. I know one story in which this man was in the process of meeting with the angels of choice, of necessity, of compassion, and they were scripting out his life. And then he was escorted to the place where descent into physical life would begin. There is a mythic tale they tell, but because it's told everywhere, there's probably truth to it. And that's that once a spirit has its assignment, it's given instructions to take a drink from the river of forgetfulness, because your instructions have to slip into your unconscious. And you have to develop and grow in maturity and faith to welcome them into your life in full swing. He decided he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to take anything to make him forget. So he jumped the river, descended, and poof, he was in his mother's womb. Only the problem was that he hadn't reduced his consciousness, like it should have been, to that of a baby. He was fully conscious, and now he was stuck in a womb. And he talked about how incredibly difficult it was, and anyway, it goes on and on. And at age 7, he was hit by a truck, and he had a near-death experience. And his angel said, get back in your body. He says, no, I've had it with this, and I'm out of here. And his angel said, get back in your body. And he said, no, this is not working. As this dialogue continued, he felt his energy moving away from his body, and finally the angel said, this is not going anywhere. It's my way or it's the highway. Now get back in that body. At this point, his vision of his body had become this way. His body was no bigger than a grain of sand, and his spirit had become the size of the galaxy. And he said to his angel, exactly how am I supposed to get in there? And his angel said, well, I'll help you. And the angel gave him an image. And, of course, gave him the mythic image of a genie going into a bottle, which is exactly what that's about. That story represents how powerful your spirit is and that it's contained within a bottle until you are able to start releasing it into a higher altitude and deal with the consequences of visions that large. So returning to your visionary intuition. We are accustomed to being in great admiration of people who are visionaries. We look at Alexander Graham Bell, or we look at people who could see the potential of humanity, and we think, what's directing them? What is guiding them? I'll tell you where you want to focus in on yourself. They have what it takes to see a grand vision and respond to it by nurturing the choices it takes to manage a vision that big. Now let me say that again, because it's so important. The size of your vision, the size of the horizon that can be unveiled to you, is in direct proportion to your capacity to make choices that honor what that vision needs to be born. That you have what it takes to make a choice and maintain that choice in true co-creative dynamics with God, or with heaven, if you prefer. That is the ultimate act of co-creation. is where you know your spirit and you have such a clear bond with the dynamics of heaven that you can be given a vision, given an instruction, and you can be counted on not to negotiate your spirit, not to let the prostitute in you have more authority than that inner spirit, not to allow what might feel like the world victimizing you challenge your inner authority, not to be sabotaged by the illusions of the outside world or the criticisms you might receive from people or the fear, and not to let the child in you collapse under a lack of adult support. I had a woman in my workshop, one of my workshops, and she had a dream, and in the dream, she saw that she was supposed to leave the country, go over to Europe, that she would meet this one person, and together they would form a working relationship. And what they would do is they would help kids who were starving, homeless kids, starving kids, that somehow they would end up starting a business that would become so successful that they would be able to do entrepreneurial work with kids. That's an incredible dream. It was an incredible dream. It was so incredible that, of course, she dismissed it, except that it was so incredible and it was so locked together. One piece followed another. It was a vision. It wasn't a dream. She was given a vision, a mission vision. Not unlike the way you hear stories about Mother Teresa. She had a vision. It was bigger than the first two convents she was in. She knew her vision couldn't thrive there. There are numbers of stories. Eileen Caddy and Finhorn, she had a vision of a community they had to start in northern Scotland. Visions are intimidating. You will never be given a vision that doesn't scare you and doesn't call for the whole of your life to be turned upside down. Visions totally require your life to be dismantled as you know it. In this incident with this woman who had the entrepreneurial vision, you have to understand something. She didn't even know anyone in Europe. I mean, talk about a journey of trust. And yet, once it was activated in her, once it had seeped into her conscious mind, it throbbed in her. It would not leave her alone. And she tried not to listen. She tried not to listen, but no matter which way she went in life, no matter who she was with, that sense that everything else paled, nothing else would nurture her, she would never be happy, was with her. She might make herself feel safe, but she would never be happy. So she finally just tossed in the towel and went to Europe. Where did she go? She went to Holland, because that's where the journey began. And she just assumed that everything, everyone would be provided for. Well, where did she begin? I'll tell you where she began. She went to the American Embassy, and she said, is there any way that I could find a way to get a little work permit here? So there was a way that they kind of interacted, and they said, sure, and they arranged something. And she had odd jobs, nothing big. And naturally, she lived waiting to meet this person. She knew she would. She wasn't sure when. She didn't know how. But she knew she would. Isn't that incredible? Well, she did. It happened at a dinner. She met this person, introduced through a new friend. And she knew that she and this woman were going to do this business together. And the intriguing part was that woman didn't know it yet. And, of course, it came to pass in its own time. And they did start a business together. And, of course, the business grew, and the business grew. And they began to find ways to help kids who were orphaned. There were a group of kids in Russia who were orphaned, and they started to supply a lot of funding for the education of these kids in a Russian orphanage. She does not say, I want to do this all over the world, or I want to have this everywhere. She doesn't live that way. What she says is, one at a time, I move where directed, I wait for an arrow. I wait for an arrow. And that's all she does. But it was phenomenal. She was given a vision. And you know what's really the most awesome part? It's her silence about what she does and who she is. She truly lives this sense that a vision is coming through her and she simply is a caretaker. Remarkable person. When you have this kind of stamina, the gods provide you with, shall we say, missions in life that reflect your highest potential, that show you what your spirit is capable of. But there is a river you need to cross that exists between creative potential, creative intuition, and visionary intuition, where you enter into and through life via the river of forgetfulness. You return to divinity, crossing the river of surrender. Here is where this process of choice meets the ultimate choice, the only choice, the last choice. And this whole process of choice that you go through as a human being, learning to follow your survival intuition, and then becoming conscious of your creative intuition, and then beginning the incredible dynamic of working hand in hand with visionary intuition and coming to know, to trust God, to be threatened by God, to fear God, to go through those dynamics. Finally, you will be led to the last, the only ritual left, which is, can you release your need to co-create, your need to make choices for yourself to a higher authority, so that your act of co-creation in the true sense of paradox is to make only one choice, which is to get out of your way and to let the divine use you as a vessel through which that profound energy of life enters into physical form. And your job is to maintain its purity, to maintain its direction by not putting your name on it. Where you finally truly realize that the energy coming through you is not you. And what it co-creates, you can allow happen without putting your name, your intention, your expectation, and your judgment on it. And that is the hardest challenge of life. But if you go inside of yourself and you just feel what I'm talking about, not think about it, feel it, roll it around in your internal gut intuition, then bring it into your creative intuition. And when it's in your creative intuition, let it sit there and ask yourself, is this the direction my creativity is leading me? Would I be able to respond more dynamically to my creative energies if I truly were capable of releasing what I would like to see happen in my creative life, what I would like to accomplish? Am I able to release that? Am I able to release my ego? Could I live a life where I created a gazillion million things and did it anonymously? Could I do that? Because in a sense, that's the question you want to ask yourself. Are you capable of living an anonymous life? That's what it means to surrender. Can you create anonymously? Can you let your spirit work all over the place and get out of the way, get out of the need to have that spirit acknowledged? That's not a matter of, well, fine, let me just be not noticed and falling into self-pity and, oh, poor me, and what good is working or something like that. What the liberation is that no matter what the gods ask you to do, that ferocious ego that judges what is powerful and what isn't, what is a big choice, what is a little choice, what is grand, what is worthy, finally, you've silenced that voice. And you enter into that profound state of grace that says, I don't know why you want me to do this. And quite frankly, I'm finally at a level of my life where I don't have to know. So let me offer you, let me give you, let me provide for you the best of my integrity, the full dedication of my honor. I give you my will. I can't figure life out anymore. And I'm not going to live my life figuring out life. It's too big a mystery. I'd rather live life than figure it out, which I might suggest is a better way to go. The support team in this incredible evolution through the three levels of choice, I would like to remind you, are the three angels of birth: the angel of necessity, the angel of choice, and the angel of compassion. You know, I talk about these three angels as if I know them. And to some extent, you know, I think I do, because in my years of doing readings on people, you learn to sense, or shall I say, I've learned to sense repetitive patterns. That's how I learn certain illnesses go with this pattern. There are markers in people's energy. And eventually I realized these markers are like guardian jewels of grace, and they were put there. They're energy points. And finally I realized we are totally escorted into life. It's not a casual experience. We're escorted. This is well scripted. We're not here in random order or for random purposes. We're escorted. And eventually I began to image, and I don't think the image was my imagery. I think it was an imagery provided me to help me out. That in fact there really were three heavenly sources that met us and helped us script a life. And one of them was the grounded angel, the one who had to provide the magnetics for the earth, the one who set the pattern for our grounded connection to life. And the next angel, the angel of choice, this one was responsible for the flow of energy that had not yet incarnated, the energy we're given to direct. And the angel of compassion is the one that provides that sense of safety, that sense of you'll be all right, that sense that there is a purpose to what you're being asked or inspired to do. These three angels are very real beings to me. And I see them, not visually, of course, but I sense their presence with people. When I am with people and I see the depth of their struggle in life, because they can't seem to develop the inner stamina to really let themselves go creatively or to make the size of the choices about themselves they really want to make or take the lid off their potential and finally let it explode in full force. That energy that is causing their misery, our three angels standing behind them saying, we've given you so much. Why are you afraid to be so much? And so they push on you and they push on you. These are angels. This isn't just your depression. This is an angelic depression. This is an angelic presence saying, I am not going to let you make choices in life to let other people make your choices. I'm not going to do that. We created you. We gave you so much more potential. And your job is to get to the point of inner spiritual stamina where you're the only one managing your spirit. And until the point that you finally make that conscious connection, those three forces will stand behind you and they will make you spiritually miserable for your own well-being. I'm going to speak to you about these three angels as real beings, because my experience is that they are. You can hear them as symbolic if you need to. But I will tell you that before you're born, you do have an interaction with these three beings. And your life is provided with an assignment. And the assignment has levels. At the survival level of the assignment is where you meet the angel of necessity. Now, necessity sounds like a punitive, I said this is necessary and you have to. It's not that. What if it's a necessity that you have the most gorgeous singing voice in the world? Or that you have talents, so many talents, you can barely squeeze them all in your body. Necessity means necessity. It doesn't mean, well, it's necessary for you to go through pain. This is the way we hear it as human beings. We're completely upside down, and this is what I mean by all I have to say is that word, necessity, and you'll show me on your faces how much you don't trust God. How much you fear God. All I have to say is the angel of necessity. And all of you look at your life and think, I guess it's necessary that I go through this or that. It doesn't even occur to you that perhaps what's necessary is that you win the Nobel Prize. Or that you become a phenomenally wonderful mother with a fabulous husband, or a wonderful husband with a fabulous wife, and that you have seven gorgeous kids? What if that's what the angel of necessity says to you? Here I would ask you, use your spiritual intuition and trust and assume only this posture, that what happens in your life is put there by the angel of necessity. Everything, all of which serves the whole of your life in your spirit. Approach your life with a neutral position. Things are neither good nor bad, up or down. They are necessary. And with necessity comes this prayer. Thank you for the experience and get me through the experience. Help me appreciate the experience. But most of all, don't let me judge the experience. Don't let me leave my spirit in this experience. Give me the guidance. Give me the visionary intuition. Give me the higher insight, so that I can go through this experience and never leave my spirit behind. Now you go to the angel of choice. The angel of choice says, now my role is to negotiate with you, because while there are dynamics of your life that are necessary, that are destined, you have choice everywhere along the way. That's the whole point of life, is the journey of discovering your spirit and its potential in the role of creation. So the angel of choice says to you, look, I'm going to provide you with guidance every step of the way. Every single place, every choice point in your life, you will find me waiting for you. And I'll speak to you. I will encourage you. I'll give you directions as to what the wisest choice in your life could be. But I won't make it for you. But I will meet you every step of the way. And you'll hear me. I'll let you know I'm there. I'll let you know because you'll feel me. Or I'll come through a dream. I'll speak through your gut. It's up to you to listen, but I will be there. You need to meet me halfway by resonating to me in the language that I speak. Most often, I will speak to you through your physical body. I'll make you feel me. Sometimes, I'll make you see me in your dreams. Sometimes, you'll hear me in a conversation. All you need to do from this point on is to know I'll meet you there. That's the angel of choice. Now comes the angel of compassion. And the angel of compassion says, through your whole life, let me give you the grace to recognize that what you do, every choice you make, everywhere you go, everyone you're with, you are there by divine design. And in every single exchange of life, every choice you make in life will be matched by a choice made by divinity that will always provide you with the wisdom to maneuver through the consequences or the next stage of your life. There is no right or wrong, and heaven does not punish. The angel of compassion, the moment you say, this is difficult, you're surrounded by compassion. The moment you say, give me guidance, you're surrounded by grace. The angel of compassion is always beside you. This makes me cry. I never bring up angels without someone saying, how do I meet them? Where do I meet them? Tell me how to talk to them. I mean, it's one thing to talk about angels, but it's another thing, like, what good is it if I don't know where to find them? So the last tool I'm going to give you is that angels require your presence, your silence, and your trust. If you enter into a meditation thinking, they've got to be around here, do they exist, I don't know, and you have expectations as to how they should show up so that you believe they're there, you're going to be seriously disappointed. Seriously disappointed. I know one person who said, I asked that angel to move a candle so I would know where it is. But you want to know something? You can laugh about it. You would do the same thing if I wasn't looking at you. Truly, the grounds upon which you meet your angels is to operate as though you've already met them. Just assume that your angel is a full companion now. Always think in that term, no matter where you go now. When you're about to make a decision, Imagine that you're running it past this angel next to you saying, is this good, bad, wise, not? What should I do? If you find yourself involved in a situation where it's time to make a choice, but you can feel someone else making it for you, and your gut and your spirit says, you are releasing your power to this person, you're intimidated by this person, why don't you own it? Why don't you admit it and face the fact that this is not what you would choose if you weren't intimidated by this person? Ask your angel to turn up the fuel in those areas of your life where you know you've got some serious work to do. Say the prayer, turn up the heat. I do not want to toss my control of choices into the hands of anybody but myself. So when I do that, and when I'm afraid, I want you as my companion to turn the heat up so high that if I sell myself down the river out of fear, you make me feel that. You make me feel it in my gut so intensely that I will not rest till I take my spirit back. Start operating with your angel this way, and trust me, you will know. You will learn. You will feel, and you will develop such a rapport with that counterpart to you in this lifetime, that as your intuition and your spiritual growth takes you on that natural elevation into conscious creativity and larger visionary force, you won't be afraid of that. You won't be afraid of all you can be in this lifetime. Finally, I'm going to add one last thing. Never underestimate the power of prayer. Never underestimate the power of sitting still and saying a prayer. And always pray in the truth, in the knowledge that heaven's not deaf. And the greatest quality of prayer that you can offer, truly, while all prayer is wonderful, is the prayer of surrender. Don't pray for something. God isn't stupid. Instead, enter into it and just sit in grace and say, just pour grace on me. Pour grace on me. Help me to see my life impersonally. Help me to let you run my life. And then get out of your own way.
This concludes Advanced Energy Anatomy with Dr. Carolyn Mace. Music by Stephen McNamara. For more information, contact Steve M. at SoundsTrue.com. For more information on the work of Dr. Carolyn Mace, please visit her website, www.mace.com. And for additional copies of this audio learning series, or a complete catalog of transformational audio and video tapes, please contact Sounds True, 800-333-9185, or write P.O. Box 8010, Boulder, Colorado, 80306, or visit our website, www.soundstrue.com. Thank you for listening.